I'm with David Boyle, who has just written a book called Voyages of Discovery, published in September by Thames and Hudson. And the book is sort of a short illustrated book, really, and it's divided into several chapters which focus on different European explorers. So there's a chapter on Columbus, one on John Cabot, Cook, the Spanish conquistadors. And at the back of the book, there's also a little selection of documents from the time with transcriptions of the documents as well. And it seems a very concise and informative little book, which is aimed, I would say, at the general reader. But David, I just wondered, what was the aim of the book and your aim in writing it?
Well, concise is the right word, really. It was intending to set out the high points of European discovery of the world, and to put that in context as well. But it was also supposed to be doing something else, which was rather a newer departure, which was to try and give a little bit more balance about the point of view from which the story is told. And as far as you can tell it, which is not very far, to try and tell it from the point of view of the people who are also being, in inverted commas, discovered. And that's what I've tried to do.
That seems quite a difficult thing to do, and I wondered what sources did you use for that, because it seems that some of these peoples in the New World who were discovered, I would have thought that a lot of their... they were oral societies, and which would have been based on oral history. So, what sources did you use, and were there that many sources?
Well, the short answer is it's a completely impossible thing to do. But once you've accepted that, I think that there are places you can look for, and you're quite right. Of course, there's very, very, very few sources at all. What there is contemporary accounts of the Europeans about their communication with the people they discovered. There are some interviews with people who may have known people who saw Captain Cook. There are sort of folk memories which one can draw on from Native Americans about early encounters. And there's a sort of growing academic literature, I think, about the argument, the basic argument, about how it was the people who encountered Columbus and the other people first regarded them, which is really an argument between people who think, as the traditional Europeans have tended to think, that they thought, oh gosh, this is a supernatural thing happening to me, and these are supernatural people. And there is also another argument which is that's absolutely completely nonsense, and that people saw them exactly as we would have seen people, and that they had no particular supernatural powers at all. And you have to, I think, in doing a concise summary, try to do justice to both sides of that argument.
And to what extent then, I mean, obviously because there are fewer sources written by the peoples who were discovered, and whereas, Columbus would have had a diary, for example, Cortes wrote back to Charles V to give an account of what he'd seen. So there's obviously a bias, like you said, which you've tried to reverse. There's a bias towards the people discovering. And to what extent then do you think your book has readjusted that balance? I mean, how successful do you think you've been in redressing
the balance? Well, you can't redress the balance. I mean, for all the reasons that you say, you just can't. But all you can do, I think, is to try and be aware that there were other people involved in all of this, and we don't know what they felt and they thought. And maybe we can begin to build up some sort of idea, but that's really as far as it goes. But I think that's perhaps not quite the end of the conversation, because you can begin to sort of draw parallels, I think, between the common experiences of you know, Magellan and Cook and Columbus and all of the others, as far as we know, which were, you know, let's face it, almost universally disastrous. But most of those encounters ended in hideous violence. Mm. But then you notice that there are some that didn't, and that there were examples of friendships between the discoverers and the discovered. And there were particularly, I think, a sort of a class of intermediary, which I think was a deliberate creation of the Portuguese, who were sort of pioneers of all of this.
It seems that the motives for these voyages of discovery were probably primarily economic. So therefore, yes, I mean, two questions. To what extent was there a genuine desire to forge some kind of relationship? And if they did, why did they want to forge that relationship?
Well, I think you're right that the generally speaking wasn't, and these were business propositions mainly. And there is some evidence that Columbus's obsession with gold first surprised and then unnerved the people he discovered. And I think also the thing that hasn't been written about very much is the way in which the possibility of sort of sexual encounters was very high up on the agenda of the sailors. And I don't think we know very much about that. But I think there are a number of hints about that. So, I mean, none of those things are especially conducive to equal relationships. So I think when they did have closer relationships with the people, it was sort of by accident, as much as anything else, and because they grew to respect and to need and the knowledge of the people they had found. And that was unfortunately rather a rare thing in those days. Mm. And of course, the danger about writing a book which is quite narrowly looking at just a few centuries at the heart of, you know, all the history of world exploration and European period as well, is that's seen as the most important part of history. And you know, clearly once you start looking at the other side of the question, there are lots of other things to talk about. But having said that, there was clearly something important about the 1490s. There was some reason why it all came together there, and that just within 2 decades or so, the whole of the atlas of the world was sketched out, with 1 or 2 exceptions. So I think that it was, you know, objectively an important period in the world's history, and that it happened to be the Europeans for whom those technological and conceptual ideas came together, that they made those great leaps forward.
And just to conclude then, because you've just said that obviously it's very difficult to write a full account of voyages of discovery, and it's a huge topic. But to conclude, what one sort of aspect or voyage would you add to that narrative to provide a more comprehensive view? I mean, something that you weren't able to cover maybe in the book, but that you think is important in terms of this period and later or earlier voyages of discovery?
Well, I mean, there are so many other things to think about, you know, right up to the Victorian discoverers and earlier, the Chinese, of course, we know so little about that, and the classical period and what voyages were made then. I mean, the one thing especially excites me, which I wasn't really able to go into in this book, which is the relationship between Columbus and Cabot, which for me, I think, is the mystery at the heart of this period, whether they were really coincidental voyages across the Atlantic within a few years of each other, using almost identical contracts, or whether in fact they were, as some historians have suggested, former business partners who fell out and went their own way. And I think the implication of the latter, if that's true, and I think it is, throws the weight on those documents they agreed with the royal families they were dealing with, which were, I think, you know, very very innovative documents. So I think that Columbus and Cabot, in that respect, are pioneers not so much of discovering America, because, you know, by all accounts, other people had been there before, possibly by accident. But they were pioneers of intellectual property. They knew how to go to another place and still profit by it as individuals, rather than handing over, as the Portuguese did, everything to the crown. And so I think that's what holds Columbus and Cabot together. And I think if we could solve that problem, what their relationship was, we would understand a lot more about what made the 1490s so important.
Would you, is that a plan, an idea for another book?
Well, I've written one book about that one already, which is what I was, why I was interested in broader discoveries. Even so, there is a huge amount more to discover, I think, about the two of them, and especially Cabot, who is a shadowy figure, who I think may turn out to be hugely more important than we realise so far.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.